Services Committee and the House Health and Public Advocacy Committee to order. I gotta get a different name for this committee because I can never say that word.
What about health?
That would work. Okay.
Chair Cruz, is the sound on? I can't hear you.
Casting. Hello.
Yep.
Is it working? Can you hear me?
This room is hosted.
Is that media?
Most of them just swallow the mic.
Is your mic?
I had to look.
Okay. I'm gonna open a public hearing on House Bill 2249 and 94, excuse me. And just for the information, there's a list on the back table by the door for persons to sign up on. Please provide your name and contact number so we may let you know when the next public hearings on House Bill 2294 are scheduled. It's my intention that the public be provided ample opportunity for input on this bill. The purpose of this meeting today is for an informational meeting from the department. And Bob, come on up. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bob Mink. I'm interim director of the Department of Human Services, and with me is Lenny Bjornson, who has been working in our community partnership unit for a long time, and now he's taking over the day-to-day operational planning and the implementation planning of our reorganization. Mr. Chair, your request, my executive team's here, and would it be helpful if I introduce them to the committee?
That would be nice, yes.
Okay. Right here in the front row, starting with Bobby Simpson from Book Rehab. Next to him is Ramona Foley from Services to Children and Family. Next to her is Cindy Becker, the newest member of our team, and she's operating our consolidated administrative services and business service functions. Next to her is the deputy director, Donnie Griffin. In this row, on your left, is Jim Neely, the acting administrator of Adult and Family Services Division. Next to Jim is Claudia Bingham, the deputy administrator from the Public Health Division in Portland. And next to Claudia is Barbara Simoglio, who is she runs the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Program. And next to Barbara is Hirsch Crawford, who runs the Office for Medical Assistance Programs, the biggest part of which is the Oregon Health Plan. And next to Hirsch is Barry Cast. He's the administrator for the Mental Health and Developmental Services, Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. Longest name in state government, I believe. And Doug Wilson is right behind Jim Neely. Doug is our budget director. I think most of you know him. And right next to Doug is Roger Auerbach, who's our administrator for senior and disabled services. Now, if I got everybody. Oh. And Lisa Joyce is our legislative coordinator, and the department this large has a lot of legislation we have to help you with, and so she helps us with that.
Is that it?
Okay. Quite a group, huh?
Yeah, that's quite a group.
And,
familiar faces.
It's a very good group, I might add. They're well prepared for this work. This is a hearing on 2294, House Bill 2294, and as I said at a previous hearing, this is a very thick bill, but really it's a very simple bill. All this bill does is eliminate the divisions, all their divisions, and invest the powers and responsibilities of those divisions in the Department of Human Services. That's really all it does. And so it's a blank slate. It's a blank slate. Now, as we go through this session, I want to try to convince you, if I can, to keep it as broad and as general as we can. Much like the Department of Consumer and Business Services has their enabling statute, where none of their divisions are named either. The duties and the responsibilities are named in statute, and then the director, the governor, and the legislature has the authority to determine how it's going to be without having to change the statute every time. But today, saying that about that, about the bill, I think it's fair to share with you where we're headed in this reorganization, so you can take a look at what we're going to propose to you, what we are proposing to you, so you can make a judgment for yourselves whether or not you want to have that much flexibility in the law or whether or not you want to narrow it down with statute, and you can do that. I mean, that's your option. You can make it as specific or as general as you choose. Currently, as you all know, we have 7 operating divisions, I just named them, and 3 program offices. Those were Office of Alcohol and Drug Prevention Services, Office of Medical Assistance Programs are 2 of the offices, as an example. But they act like a division, so we really have 9 division-like organizations. And that's demonstrated for you here in this notebook, but we'll get to that in a minute. What I want to talk to you about is that each of those divisions operates part of the human services continuum in the state, and they operate them in partnership with many, many others. We don't do this job of human services alone. We do it with county government. We do it with not-for-profits. We do it with contractors. It's very broad. There are, as you know, over 9,000 employees in our department. I suspect you could double that, at least, for the number of people working in human services in the state. Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, as an example, does its work through county government. In state law, the boards of county commissioners are the mental health authority in the state and for their areas. And they provide mental health and developmental disabilities, case management and services at the local level. And we provide them money, we provide them standards, and we provide and the like through contracts. The Office of Alcohol and Drug Prevention does the same with county government and providers. And there's a network of providers throughout the state that we contract with. The Office of Medical Assistance Programs, the same thing. We have the managed care programs with which we provide, and we also have some fee-for-service programs, but we contract directly with people, or we pay people directly for the services we provide. And in Medicaid, as an example, what we do is the process of making people eligible, and then somebody else provides the medical services. So this is a very broad department. Now, the reorganization that we're going to be talking about is a reorganization of the services that we provide as a state agency. This isn't talking about reorganizing how different counties do mental health services or services developmental disabilities, or people with developmental disabilities, or how counties do alcohol and drug services. We have some standards in place around that and performance measures around that, but the responsibility falls with local government and providers for those services. What this reorganization is talking about is what we do as a state government in the Department of Human Services. And I got to tell you, and you all know this from talking with constituents, this network of services we have is complex. It's fragmented. Depending on where you are, it's more fragmented than other places. It's hard to navigate through. And our clients that we see are by and large people with more than one issue that we're helping them with. About 35 to 40% of our 30 to 35% of our clients have a single need. The remainder of them have multiple needs. 25% of our clients still go to 3 or more of our divisions. And within those 3 or more divisions, 25% of our clients are getting 4 or 5 services. And what happens as they go from division to division in a community is they get different people serving them. They tell their story over and over again. Information is entered into the computer each time they go to a different office. And the services end up, every place they go, the services end up being described in a case plan, of which they have multiple in many cases. I think I told you in an earlier meeting, Judge Larson said to our cabinet, Judge Larson is a circuit judge in Lane County, runs a family court there, that he sees clients every day in his courtroom with multiple case plans from us, and those case plans are so complicated, he, after going to college, graduating from law school, spending 20 years on the bench, couldn't do the case plan. They're that complicated. Or they're cross purposes. They require people to be in more than one place at the same time. So the idea here around this reorganization is, how can we simplify this system for our clients, take the fragmentation inherent in multiple systems and put the burden on the government providing them to figure it out for clients rather than the burden on the clients to figure it out for themselves. And that, what I'd like to start with in this notebook, if I could, is the very first tab that says state profiles. And this is very recent information from 1999 about who we serve in Oregon. And I just want to demonstrate to you the need that Oregonians have from the system of human services. This data that I'll describe represents the data from each of our divisions and also from county mental health and the WIC program in county public health. We do not have information from the rest of the county public health system, so this is a little bit understated, but we also have information in here from our alcohol and drug providers and the AAAs and others who aren't part of our organization, but we collect data from them. And what we're going to try to do here is compare this data. Well, we're not going to compare. We're going to show you this data, and we have the data by county. But the first page shows you that in Oregon, in 1999, we served 985,000 individuals. These aren't duplicated. These are unduplicated individuals that we served in Oregon. Now, for a state our size, I think the last census showed about 3.4 million. That's a lot of people. But I got to tell you that any time in the year, over a course of a year, we serve this many. So you have to look at the population of Oregon, about how many people may have lived in Oregon over the year, and that's closer to 3.9 million.
Bobby, Senator?
Bobby, just real quick, how does that compare to other states? I think number macrocosm, but how do we compare? Are we serving more or less than other states are in the big aggregate?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, you know, I don't know for sure, but my guess is that we're not much different than other states.
Okay.
I can try to find that. I'm not sure everybody, other states have this kind of information. There's a huge obstacle to getting this information. And most other states aren't configured the way we are, where we have most of these services under one umbrella department. Most other states are in separate departments, and information is hard to bring together. But I suspect that it's similar. My point was going to be about this is that when we look at this, we've estimated that in Oregon, over the course of 1999, 3.9 million individuals lived in Oregon at one time or another, taking into account in-migration and out-migration, deaths and births. Remember, the 3.4 million you see in the census is a shot in time of what the population was. Over the course of the year, we think it's higher than that. So we work with people to make those estimates. Hmm. Well, you can see the types of services that we have classified here. And by the way, the second tab in are definitions for each of them. So if you're interested and what the definition for each of those are, they're there. But if you turn that first page and you look at there's a graph on the back of the second page called percentage of clients receiving multiple services. This is a point I want to make. Statewide, 66% of the people we serve receive two or more services. 42% of the people we serve receive three or more services. 27% receive four or more services, 18% receive five or more services. So the people that come to us have multiple needs. And so it's important that these needs are configured in such a way that they're easily accessible, that they're delivered in a way that's understandable to people who need them, and that they're configured in a way that's compatible to the community norms that we work in. some communities will have things structured differently than others just because of the way the community is. As an example, services in Multnomah County are likely going to be delivered in a different manner than they are going to be in delivered in Baker County. So this is a very important point, and the point about this, the number of services that we have here, that each client has, is that we believe that the current organization that we have creates obstacles to eliminating the fragmentation of the system. And what we want to do is eliminate the fragmentation of the system. We want to empower the client to be able to come into an office and access these services as easily as they can. And we want to put the burden on us rather than the client to figure out any fragmentation issues. Under the second tab, as you can see, I've given you a county by county profile of the clients. And so you can see for your county how many people we serve, the types of services they're receiving. And if you look in the second page, you can see the multiple services that people receive in your specific county. I just happen to be looking at Douglas County because our two chairs are from Douglas.
Just happened to be.
I think that's appropriate.
Yes. And for Douglas County, as an example, you can see that we served nearly 41,000 people in 1999. And on the back side of that, you can see the similar thing I talked to you about for the statewide numbers. 68% received two or more services. 42% received four or more services, and 30% in Douglas received five or more services, and nearly 20% received six or more services. So I think it's important, as an example in Douglas County then, that our services be configured in such a way that clients can easily access those services, that they can get one case plan from the human services that we're responsible for in our department, one case plan, not several, and that they have an advocate working within our system to help them get to the services they need. So this is new information. It's very illuminating on the situation that we have with the people that we serve. As I said, now after the next tab, we have the definitions of the services, and I'm not going to get into those. But I'd like to turn now, if I could, to what we want to achieve for our clients. And I want to describe for you the service delivery model that we would like to have for our clients when they come into any of our offices. One of the things that this is based upon is that for Department of Human Services office, whether it be now an Adult and Family Services office or an SCF office, or an SDSD office or a VR office, when we're done with this reorganization, it ought to be a department-wide office with a broad array of services rather than a narrow specialty, so that the specialties would still be there, but they'd be there in partnership with others so that people can serve them. Given that, I'd like to have Lenny Bjornson walk you through this client service delivery model so you can understand where we're going, and then I'll get into more detail about how the organization needs to look to support this service delivery model. Lenny.
Well, committee members are behind the proposed organization tab.
Thank you.
Chair Cruz and Chair Fisher, members of the committee, my name is Lenny Bjornson. I work for the Director's Office of the Department of Human Services. Indeed, as Bob mentioned, I could walk you through the process that is in that chart that you're looking at. Also, in the back of your notebook, if you'd like to see some of the text that goes along with that chart, it's on pages 35 through 37. We propose this process for integrating services for our families and other consumers. Over the holidays, we had a couple different task groups, actually several task groups, work on how it would be better for us to coordinate services for families that are struggling with multiple problems, but also how do we expedite services for those people who are just accessing one or perhaps two different types of supports. And so I will talk about both of those. As you're aware, Oregonians come to DHS programs looking for a variety of social supports, and as Bob mentioned, through our employees and our partners, in 1999, we served over 980,000 folks. With all of those people, we want to be more proficient and more coordinated in serving them, especially those with multiple struggles. In our decades worth of experience with service integration, the real opportunity there is with people and families and consumers that have a variety of struggles that they're working on. Our plan is for DH offices, which we have 147 of them around the state, plus hopefully many of the offices of our partners, that they will become a no-wrong-door type of approach, where connecting them to a variety of services will be the objective. In fact, if you look at the top of the chart where it has points of contact, at that point of contact, our offices would do some type of brief assessment, a discussion with the customers who come to us to do one of three things. One, to connect them with community supports that DHS and its contracted partners may not necessarily provide, such as food banks, support groups, or after-school recreation. We propose to call this, and you can see that box off to the left, an enhanced community referral. In fact, our task groups over the holidays said that we want to connect people in a way that it's, the slang was, no pass without a receiver. You can't just give somebody a telephone number and say, good luck. We want to make sure that the customer or consumer is connected to the person or agency that they could get those supports from.
Hallelujah, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Card.
It was football season.
It was football season. our second activity at the point of contact would be to expedite the connections of those customers to single or relatively simple services, still very important, but benefits such as food stamps or flu shots or child care, where a person comes to us knowing what they're needing, they want to access it, they want to have a little bit of connection, we get that done in an expedited way, and we say, great, let us know if there's anything else that we can help you with later on. But thirdly, the objective of service integration is to coordinate multiple services and supports according to the needs and strengths of the consumers and their families. As Bob mentioned, over a third of our, actually over 40% of our customers currently access three or more services provided by DHS employees and our contracted partners. This is where we would link together services like mental health therapy, child protection, or job development services. For families and consumers with multiple needs, we hope that many of our partners will provide a lead services manager. You can see that there in the middle of the chart. This person would provide their specialty service, such as alcohol and drug counseling, but also they would coordinate other supports that the consumer or the family would need and want. The lead services manager would convene the other service specialists with the consumer to craft a single integrated services plan rather than the several plans that they might have today. They would build upon client strengths in building that plan, and they would coordinate the specialty services such as child development, life skills trainings, or Meals on Wheels. They would not become a generalist case manager, but rather continue to do their specialty and coordinate the other supports that the consumer or family would need. There's a box on the page that you can see some dotted lines to that says Integrated Services Coordinator. If the lead services manager and her colleagues from DHS or partner organizations have difficulty convening or coordinating services or crafting that single plan, and they would call on assistance, consultation, facilitation, mediation from the Integrated Services Coordinator. Again, the Integrated Services Coordinator would not be a generalist caseworker. In fact, they would not assume the casework responsibilities, but rather they would be a convener, a facilitator, a mediator among all the different specialists that the family may be working with or needs to work with. They would bring together, and perhaps in your experience, in your industry, you bring together differing strategies, the conflicting values, sometimes that are common to multidisciplinary teams. And when you bring folks together from a variety of organizations, the varying ways in which they think that families need help, or the differing values and how they do that support, can be in conflict. And we know that in some settings, over our 10 years of experience, that we need an outside facilitator sometimes to help that group of specialists work with the family to get this coordinated plan and the services done well.
Senator Carter? Or Senator Carter, I'm sorry. I'm going back
I
4 years.
It's okay. I'm still a representative of the people.
That's true, you are.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I think for those of us who are in social services, who are counselors and therapists and that kind of stuff, we understand multidisciplinary teams. And I think since we might not make the assumption that everybody up here is a human services person, so when we start talking about that, if you just give an example.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Chair Cruz and Chair Fisher, Senator Carter. Senator Carter. Multidisciplinary teams exist in many parts of social services and perhaps other industries as well, where you bring specialists from different types of work together in a coordinated way to build a plan or to assess problems. It may be true in manufacturing, it may be true in retailing, where you have specialists to come together and need some coordination. We call it multidisciplinary, other folks might call it multi-organizational.
But in your situation, you're talking about schools and other services. That's all I wanted to have an example, because I think we're way late, and it would be nice to give an example of who are your partners on this multidisciplinary team.
Yes, yeah, Senator Carter.
It's okay, I'm Margaret.
Sorry, Margaret. the multidisciplinary teams that we work with currently in many service innovation settings around Oregon have school counselors,
yes,
school administrators. They might have folks from senior centers,
yes,
or those kinds of facilities. There may be somebody from a local community policing setting, a mental health therapist, an alcohol and drug therapist, maybe clergy or other members of the extended family that are viewed as helpful to where the family wants to go.
Thank you.
So I was talking about multidisciplinary teams, and one of the things we know is that the lead worker for a family might not be the best lead worker as the family works through their issues and achieves their goals. In fact, depending on the most pressing issues of the customer, the team might select a staff person from their roster that to become a lead services manager who was not the lead services manager in the beginning. Might say, for instance, a family is working on alcohol and drug issues, they might select the alcohol and drug counselor to be the lead worker for a period of time until those issues are stabilized or recovery begins. And then another issue such as workforce skill development might be the more pressing issue, and then the workforce or jobs counselor might be the lead worker at that point. But the team, the multidisciplinary team, would be the folks who would select with the family, making a decision of who might be the best lead worker for that period of time, depending on the most pressing issues. Okay. Having said all of that, the integrated service plan would be a map for all the professionals and other helpers to support the consumer's goals in a coordinated way. I want to make note that, as you probably read in our plan in the back side of the notebook, that when it comes to involuntary clients that several of our divisions work for, we must appreciate the objectives and perspectives of courts and communities in developing that plan. And many times the juvenile bench will work with us to develop the plan and approve the plan and to enforce the plan. So I want to also point out that throughout the course of DHS involvement in a person's life, consumer and family strengths and community support to be utilized, we know clearly that you cannot get to comprehensive supports, or what you might call holistic supports, for consumers and families by just using DHS employees alone. The programs that are run by DHS employees are an important part of the picture, but you have to look at community supports, the programs done by our partners, to round out the full array of supports that any family or consumer might need. That would include extended family as well as their faith organizations as appropriate. So with that, Mr. Mink, Chair Cruz, Chair Fisher, I covered the basic chart as we have it so far.
If I could ask a question, because when we get to this enhanced community referral, basically the community partnership, Have we taken a look at the myriad of planning and coordinating bodies that we legislatively or otherwise have dumped on communities? Because I guess from my perspective, if we are indeed going to treat the family as a whole unit and not have segments, we need to look at how we are structuring our volunteer efforts, and are we looking at streamlining that and eliminating many of these planning functions and kind of pulling them all together?
Mr. Chair, this bill does not attempt to eliminate any of the planning functions there, but I think it sure maybe raises some issues for you about the myriad of them. Here's one thing I need to tell you, though, is that we're going through now, after we've got this basic design, we've got to figure out the devil that are hiding behind the details of this. We have on our plate Senate Bill 555. We got the House Bill 2004 planning process. We've got alcohol and drug planning processes, mental health planning processes. All of those have to be taken into account as we design this for every community. And it's got to come together somehow. Now, I don't have a great answer about how that comes together in every community, but certainly this has to fit within the framework of that broad planning that happens.
Okay, I guess, Bob, it just... I see that as an integral part of any remake we do is I know, especially in the more rural communities where our volunteer base is fairly static, and we've got our best people spending all their times attending meetings of different planning bodies, and it kind of detracts from the time they're allowed to actually get out and interact and do the things they would like to do. So I'm hoping at some point in this process we really can address that aspect of things.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could just say one other thing, is that our department isn't the lone driver in those planning processes.
Absolutely.
A lot of other entities drive that. We drive part of it. And so I made a note, and we will try to address that as we go forward, but we're probably going to need your help with a lot of it.
Well, and we'd certainly be willing to do that, and you're right, you're not the lone driver here, but we've got movement in on the judicial side to get to family court models. I mean, there's lots of things happening, and they to allow them to happen in their own universes kind of negates a lot of the work we're trying to do here.
Yep.
So, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I'm jumping ahead too far, but I'm trying to visualize this in my mind. So are you saying that these services would be all housed in one building so that there would be an intake person who would be an expert in one of these fields who then would decide what other experts need to be involved?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, that would certainly be a desired result, but I got to tell you that the services that are allocated for human services aren't evenly allocated throughout the state. So there's going to be some areas of the state where that's not going to be a possibility. But we want them to be as comprehensive as we can make them in any location. It may be that that's simply not possible.
But when it is, possible, say in an urban area, then that would be what you anticipate, is people would be housed in one office?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tomei, we would want every specialty housed in one office, but say in Multnomah County, that doesn't mean we'd have one DHS office. There'd
right.
be multiple
right.
DHS offices, but we would certainly like to have every specialty in one of them, if that's feasible.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah. Thank you. We turn the page. This is a graphic that I think is important to show you. And what this is, you have to turn it horizontally to look at it. It says on the left, existing customer service flow, and on the right, proposed customer service flow. And I want to describe the one on the left with you very quickly. Right now, our department operates four independent field systems. And although they work together somewhat, they are independently managed. And there's an independent, you can see there's four lines of management for each of these four field systems within our department. Now, what this doesn't show is because it's not part of our organization, is that there's another management line for mental health services, and there's another one for public health services that are county-run, and that could include alcohol and drug as well, or alcohol and drug could be a not-for-profit, or there could be a AAA in some cases instead of SDSD, or in addition to SDSD office. AAA sometimes don't provide the full scope of services. So this is only our piece of it. But as you can see, there are four lines. And really what happens with a client is they have four portals of entry for each of these specialty services in our system. Now that's a generalization because there's some places in our state where we work very, very well together. And clients get something more akin to our proposal than this. But what you can see here are four case managers who could serve a client, and then the management structure for each of those four areas up to the director's office. Thank you. And it's a very broad management structure, and it's very deep. And I got to tell you, within this one, I've done a little graphic manipulation here. I got to confess to that. And the one on the left, I've got the client at the bottom, and the one on the right, I have the client on top. But it makes the point I want to make is right now, I think the client is more often than we have liked at the mercy of the system, mm-hmm. and the burden's on the client to navigate the fragmentation. What we want to get to is the client being empowered. The burden around any fragmentation that exists is on the organization. So the one on the right is what we're proposing, is that this would be very consumer-oriented, based upon the strengths of a consumer, going in to an office, and then there in the circle is what Winnie described before on the other page, there in this oval, I guess it's more of an oval. And then there would be one management structure rather than four, coming up, reporting to me, or the director, whoever the director may be at that time. So that's the focus here. More consumer-driven, try to narrow that management group and flatten it. And as you know, one of the things that we hope to achieve out of this is savings. A great deal of the savings are going to come right here mm-hmm. in the management staff. The proposal that what we'll bring forward when we get the details done is not one case manager or somebody's directly serving clients. None of those will be eliminated, but the management ranks supporting the broadness and the thickness of this structure, we're going to narrow that and we're going to flatten it. So that's the graphic around this. The next page is the current organizational structure within the Department of Human Services. And it has the six divisions and three operating the three program offices plus our administrative groups. And you know about that. It's the only thing that's new in this chart that I haven't talked about yet is the number of offices that each of them operate. But where I want to get is to the next page in our proposal around the new organization. Instead of the six divisions, three operating offices, I'm proposing to you a separate field structure that's separate from the program offices. And the reason I'm proposing that is that I believe there are both pros and cons having a field system separate or connected to the program offices. And we've lived for a long time with the field being separate, being connected to the separate program offices. And I believe because the focus of the individual program offices historically have been so narrow that that's driven the field staff into silos that create the fragmentation that we see. And what we want is a field operation that takes into account all the programs that we have that isn't broken up into silos, that's as unfragmented as we can possibly make it. So I've disconnected the field from the program areas. We want then what's remaining of the divisions, once we take the field away from it, we've put together these program offices into three major program clusters. And they're in the center of this page. The first is health. And I'm very excited about this cluster. This would include the Office of Medical Assistance Programs, the health plan. It would include the Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse Programs. It would include the mental health portion of Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division. And it would include public health.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. I got it.
Bobby, let me tell you, I had a constituent call me the other day, and they have a real big problem with the health plan. And as you are organized today, there is such a disconnect that your people who have a person in the system send the person to navigate that organ health plan piece with a multidisciplinary approach. Will that team be working on behest of that person so they don't have to try to continue to navigate the system as they do now? I heard you say yes, but I just want to go back to it.
Well, yeah, they will help. But we're still dealing with managed care plans who are under contract. And many times, I want to tell you, even in the future, that Hirsch Crawford and his team of people are going to have to get involved in some of these things.
Yeah. I personally know Hirsch and will call him on behalf of my constituents. We have new legislators who might not know how to navigate the system either, so that we can hold you guys responsible for our constituency needs. And so having some kind of means by which the multidisciplinary approach is going to work, first of all, means that we who are responsible for our constituency will know how you guys operate and then can hold you responsible. I'd like to know that I can come to the legislature one day without worrying about constituents calling me at the close of the day because the system didn't work for them. I don't mean personalities or individuals. I mean the system. And since you have this grandiose opportunity of redesigning and re-implementing the system, now is the time to see how those systems work in a more collective manner for your client. The number two thing, Mr. Chairman, if you will, how in the world are you going to get other agencies to collaborate or to talk with you? Now, has this come down from the governor?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter has what come from the governor?
This new design here.
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I presented this to the governor, and this is our idea.
I mean, yeah, it's your idea, but has he spoken breath to life and walked on the water and say that all of you departments will talk to each other?
Oh, you mean these folks?
Oh, not Bobby, not your people, but I heard you mention DHS. If we're talking about a multidisciplinary approach, folk, we better get real about this.
Well,
because you have drug and alcohol who's not underneath you, yet I bet if you were to poll your clients and how you provide service and opportunity to those people, many of them have more than one area of need.
Yes.
And so how do you cross those lines so that many of us are not getting 3 o'clock in the morning phone calls because the system is not working?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, the services within our control in our department, we're going to integrate those. So I hope that the fragmentation that you're seeing can be lessened.
Right.
But even when we're done, I'm afraid you're still going to get phone calls. I hope there aren't as many, however.
Well, that gives me a lot of confidence.
No, but people are going to complain about things. But
yes.
But the other part of it, just let me say about this, other state agencies working with us, we need to do that. The Commission Children and Families, we're working with on this. We're trying to work with the health department on this. As a matter of fact, the governor's cabinet on Friday, the governor looked at me and Verlina Crosley from the employment department and said, now when DHS is reorganizing, what are we doing about the workforce one-stops and how are they going to be linked? That's a good question. And so now Verlina and I are working on that.
I have to say,
to work on that.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I'm telling every last one of you, you can't say I didn't tell you. Unless we have a voice, because I mean, really, I believe that, Bobby, I have no doubt that you guys are going to do a good job. I've worked hard with DHS for the last 16 years, so I believe that you will take care of things within your division. That's not within your total you know, collaborative. My point is, two chairmen, parties in power, is that when you start talking about problems in terms of state agency to state agency, and I'm talking about folk getting off their turfs, because if you show me a family that is in trouble today, that is having drug and alcohol, that is having unemployment, and that is a client of the state, we do not serve those clients well, and we spend more money trying to deal with their problem than if there was one responsible party who says, we're going to practice this multidisciplinary approach. That's why I want to know if the governor is speaking from department to department, from agency to agency. So if this multidisciplinary team is going to work, see, that's why I want you to break that stuff down. And okay. So that we can know how is it's working and how it's best benefiting the clients that we were designed to serve in the state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, we're working with housing, we're working with transportation, we're working with commission, we're working with other state agencies about this. This is very complex and hard work, but we're working on it. That's what I can commit to you now, that right. We're going to work on it.
Right. Now, Bobby, I want you to hear me clearly. Are you hearing me saying I have every confidence in you reorganizing your department? I'm talking about the other agencies that you can't speak for. That's why I want to know if the governor is talking and giving directions to other agencies that you are the central focus of many of these clients, but do the other collaboratives come in and practice the multidisciplinary approach?
He is doing that.
Great. Hallelujah.
Representative Lee.
Yes. Bob, could you tell me, does the reorganization give us a new opportunity to look at how your various internal departments are going to be working with the local safety net clinics, such as the one in Clackamas County or some of the local nonprofits? Is this a new opportunity to make that work better?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, it is. And if you would give me the names of people from safety nets, we will put them on our implementation committees to see if we can't make that work better.
I'll get those names to you. Thank you.
I was saying that I am excited about this health cluster because with those different disciplines within health, for the first time, we can have a better integration of public health policy, more than public health, physical health, public health, chemical dependency, all health disciplines in the state. I think there's a real opportunity here. Within the seniors and people with disabilities group, that is primarily senior SDSD, senior and disabled services. It's also intended to be developmental disabilities from the Mental Health and Developmentally Services Division. So in this plan, that one division split. Part of it goes into health, part of it goes into this cluster. And the other part of it is vocational rehabilitation. The third program cluster is around adult families and children, and these will include the policies and programming for the children's programs and the adult programs. Those are primarily the Adult and Family Services Division programs and SDF programs. Now, there are 150 different programs with our department, and we haven't gotten to the point where we decided where every one of those fall. So I've just given you a general description of what's intended for these, and there's still some conversation about what goes where. As an example, I think we need to have some conversation whether or not maternal and child health, as an example, stays in the health cluster, or is that so connected with some things we're doing in adult and families and children that should be moved over there? I don't have the answer to that. I'm just using it as an example of something we need to consider.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Cromwell.
Or conversely, thank you, Mr. Chair, or conversely, our services that are in the adult families and children cluster, should they be over in the on the health side?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things that we're doing, Mr. Chair and Representative Cromwell, is, as I just said a second ago, we're putting together these implementation teams, and that's where we're going to sort through it. And we want to have a combination of state people and local people working through those issues so we can see all sides of it before we decide how we want to propose something to you.
Mm-hmm. Senator Shields.
can, Bobby. I just wanted to congratulate you and thank you for one little phrase that's under adult families and children. It talks about policies and programs related to helping people what? Move out of poverty. Overwhelmingly, welfare reform hasn't done that. And even just to have it in print now and then is helpful, because that's what we're supposed to be doing, not just moving people off welfare, but trying to find ways to move them out of poverty. Any comments?
Well, Representative Cruz, Senator Shields, not everybody in poverty was ever on that welfare. I mean, poverty is a much bigger issue than moving people off welfare, but I think we're an important part of that. So those are the three questions.
Senator Fisher. Senator Fisher.
Bobby, while we're on the subject of this integration and so forth, there's been some comment concerning some of the federal requirements that apparently, for instance, Voc Rehab or something might require a separation here some way. Are there ways of doing the integration and still maintaining a separatism there so that we don't, because we obviously don't want to lose monies that we've got in matching funds and so forth.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I got to tell you, one of the principles I should have said right up front is we're not going to do anything here that's going to jeopardize federal funding. And Voc Rehab is an issue, and I intend to go to Seattle here pretty soon. My management assistant is trying to set up a time I can go up and talk with the people in the federal government see how we can sort through it for the rehab, Voc Rehab folks. Right now, what we're proposing is have a unit within SDSD that's designated as Voc Rehab, and that complies with the law, but we want to make sure that every detail of what we intend does comply with the law. So I'm going to be having those conversations with the federal government. We're not going to lose any money in this. That's one of our goals. Now, if I could just add on to this, recently Lenny got a call from Department of Health and Human Services, Region 10 in Seattle, and the Administration for Children and Families want to talk to us about how they can help us with this reorganization. So at least part of the federal government thinks this is a great opportunity here in Oregon, what we're trying to do. And so one of the things I want to do is try to see how the Rehab Service Agency within the Department of Education can help us as well.
I want to make sure that, at least from the Senate Chair's point of view, that you have our support too. If you need a letter from us or anything else, or input from our committee or whatever, we're here to help.
I appreciate that. I actually think I need all the help I can get on this side. This is a big task, but I think it's the right thing. I'd like to move to the left side of this chart with continuous system improvement. Now, this is critical in this organization that we have this component. It's critical for many reasons, but one of the most important is that I've separated field from program. And we need a continuous system improvement mechanism to constantly measure whether or not we're meeting the program measures that we say we're meeting in the field system, and that we're measuring whether or not the policy we have in place is doing the job it's supposed to be doing. There's got to be that circle of knowledge and study and evaluation going on. And so we're proposing a continuous system improvement piece that will include research, will include evaluation, program measurement, and the like. And we don't do that very well as a department. You know, we have, this department right now is over $8 billion total funds in a biennium. And we do not, department-wide, have a function like this. Now, some of the divisions have a research function, but we're not testing whether or not all the divisions are coming together around these performance measures. So we're proposing to do this. Now, if you have any questions about this, here's the man. He knows all about that.
You're skirting a question I had, so I'm going to ask it right here because you're right in that vicinity. Okay. When you're evaluating and so forth, are you also going to be evaluating from a dollar standpoint?
Yes.
Standpoint.
Well, yes. I mean, we've got it. Now, you mean like unit cost and
well, I mean, like overall budget savings and how it's working rather than just the matter of the fact that it's working better system-wide for the client or something like that. I mean, I think that's an integral part of it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think one of the things you're going to see once we get into this is one of the first things we have to do is create a baseline for the whole department about what's happening, how much we're spending in each program, the numbers of people we're serving, the outcomes we're getting. And then once we have that baseline, we can measure that over time. You're going to have a much better idea of what you're getting for the money you're spending and whether or not it's the outcome you want or do we have to do something different to get a different outcome. So you're going to have a better handle on that than you ever will before if we can do this. Lenny, you have anything to add to that? It's a handoff.
Yes, indeed. No pass without a receiver.
Receiver?
Chair Fisher, currently many of the programs in the department do count the number of services they provide and do measure some of the changes that occur with their customers and sometimes also compare costs with those kinds of outcomes. And we want to build on that strength and move that department-wide and take a look at both department-wide and different counties by counties, how are we doing with our partners on those kinds of outcomes versus investments kinds of questions.
Representative Morissette.
Thank you. I guess I want to talk about the quality versus quantity evaluations, and I think Senator Shields was getting at this also. How do you measure quality? Now, you said measure the changes that take place with the customer. And I think, again, you're looking at objective and subjective and measurable and almost unmeasurable. And so I'm really interested in looking at some of the measures that you come up with, because I don't feel the welfare to work has been a huge thing. It has financially in some ways. I mean, you've moved people around, but you give a little bit and you take a little bit away, and they may not be better off after they're through that process. And so I'm really interested in the quality measures that you come up with.
Then on the right side of the diagram, we have administrative supports which we've consolidated before. Each of the divisions had their own set of business systems and administrative systems. We're putting those together so that we act more like a department in our contracting and our purchasing and our personnel actions, the way we treat our employees, and the whole gambit. Now, actually, the legislature asked us to do this before, and we're just now finishing that up. But this is part of that. The bottom part of this chart, where you see on the right-hand side, DHS service delivery areas, that gets back to the service design you saw in a previous handout. In order to manage this, we're going to have a management structure. It doesn't have to be as broad and as deep as it is now, but we need a management structure. This is just to indicate that we will have a field structure. Then on the left, where you see the dotted line from our field structure going to partners, as I said earlier, a great deal of our work is done by counties and by not-for-profits, by health plan providers and the like. And we have to have a connection between what we're doing in the field and those partners. And the partners also have to be connected to the program offices who are writing them contracts. So this is basically the design that we're proposing to you.
Senator Shields.
Yeah.
Question.
Bobby, if I try to, you've used the word integrate several times this afternoon. If I try to integrate the last four pages under this proposed organization tab.
Yes.
And if I see that lead services manager on the first page, and if I flip then to the second page and I see the existing customer service flow.
And the proposed.
And the proposed one, and that circle below the consumer there.
Yes.
How much time, energy, money will have to be spent training somebody that's maybe worked in AFS exclusively up to now to be able to be a lead services manager or whatever if he's working with somebody that's needs help in the VR area or the SDSD area? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
How much cross-training is going to have to occur? How much is that going to cost? I mean, and is it going to impact efficiency?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, training's a huge thing here. It's just the 800-pound gorilla in the closet around this reorganization. There's two 800-pound gorillas, actually. The other one's information systems.
Mm-hmm.
But the training gorilla is one that we need to invest in. Now, in this reorganization, I am supposed to save $10 million. In the governor's budget, he's let me keep $6 million of that to invest in training and information systems. Now, I got to tell you, we can't do all the information systems fixes for that amount of money, but we're going to do the best we can so that it's not as big an obstacle as it is right now. But training is a huge thing that we have to not only train our supervisors, but we have to train our staff in how to partner, how to collaborate, how to get together to write a case plan. We're sometimes not very good at that. In many places we are very good at it, but in other places we're not. And so we have to do some systems-wide assessment, training assessments, and then training. And then for the manager, it may be for a while, Senator Shields, that we have two supervisors for this group of people than one, but what we evolve into it. This is the desired system, but when we get into the devil's in the details work that we're just going to start next week, it may be that we end up with two supervisors here so that the training curve isn't as steep, at least initially. But training is one of the things that we're investing in, and I don't know exactly how that's going to look yet.
Follow up?
I appreciate the way you flipped the charts over, you know, between the existing and the proposed. But can you give us a guess as to, you've got AFS case managers, SCF case managers, VRD case managers, and SDSD case managers here at the bottom. How many folks are there across that line now, and how many of them are going to have to be cross-trained to be in this circle up here at the top on the... How's that going to work?
One of the principles we have here is that each of the folks in the old system will take their specialty and maintain their specialty in the new system. So if you're a child protective services worker, you keep that specialty and you take it over the new system. If you're a VR counselor, you take that knowledge and that expertise and you take it over to the new system. Where the training comes in is not to expand their specialty. The training comes into how to work with others around developing a plan, how to cooperatively work through a client's needs, and those kinds of things. Now, that's broader training. That's not as broad a training, as I should say, that we're going to have for some of our managers who are going to have to ramp up around becoming more expert in some areas. But one of the principles we have here is to keep our specialties. We can't turn our 4,000 or 5,000 field workers into generalists, or we're going to lose big time. And we can't do that. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair,
we've got Senator Mona Sanderson.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to follow up a little bit on Senator Shields' comment, and I want to see if this is where we're going with this. Right now in Clackamas County, SCF. Service for Children and Families has needed a public health nurse. And what they have done is they have actually contracted with Clackamas County Public Health, and we send a full-time public health nurse who is actually, even though she's a nurse, she's got her training and her supervision in the county health department, is actually over there working with the case managers as well as working with the clients. In another instance, we have AFS, who has also had a contract with us, very small amount of money, and our public health nurse has gone over to AFS in some of their programs, working with women, and primarily women, who have children and health needs. And so that, I think, is the idea, and I wanted to see
if that's
more concrete.
Yep. Mr. Chair, that's exactly what we're shooting for here, is to get people from the county human services, the mental health therapists, the public health nurses, and other folks who work in public health to work with together around the people that we all serve. I mean, we all serve these folks. They have these needs. And so how can we work together around a single case plan so it's easier for the client to get to these services? That's exactly what we're looking for.
Representative Lee.
Yes, thank you, Bob. What is the role of the system navigator? Is that the person who's going to figure out the pathways for each client or for a group of clients?
Representative Lee, Chair Cruz and Chair Fisher, the system navigator function has been discussed in a variety of task groups and actually has been around for several years in many integrated sites. That function might be available from the point of contact to help some clients, consumers navigate when they have multiple services. Other times it might be a function that gets woven into the plan because the family says, I really need somebody to help me with connecting, because you can't always have every service in every building. And sometimes we're, as we blend teams and we blend facilities, you still need that navigation function. The plan is, when you get a chance to read the plan, it doesn't necessarily speak to that's an ongoing required function in the design, but something that localities could customize into their way of doing this.
Thank you.
Before we move off the chart, I mean, you did mention information systems, which is another huge area. How many separate information systems do you currently have, and how many do you think you need?
Mr. Chair, I can't answer that. We have a lot of them. We have a lot of them. And not only do we have a lot of them, but they were created at different points in time when specialty federal funds came our way, and they were developed in isolation of everything else we do.
Yeah.
And so it's a problem. And so we need to figure out how we can take these huge capital assets we have. I mean, there's a lot of money that we've invested in these systems, and they do work. They're just isolated. How can we figure out how to put a front end on these so that we can get information out of them better? Now, we've got some ways that we can get information out, but it's not exactly what we want. But we're gonna try to figure out how we can continue the investment we have in our assets, our software assets, but try to make them more user friendly. We can't afford to replace them.
Well, maybe. I guess. Do you have an inventory or a matrix that we can have access to?
We can do that.
Thank you. Senator Carter.
Under the old administration, because I don't want to put anything on your back that you have inherited thus far. Yeah. You guys told us, I was on Ways and Means Committee, 1997. And Ways and Means Committee gave you guys the money to gear up 5 years before for the Y2K, which means that you told us, not you, of course, that the department, that you were doing that and you were going to bring into compliance a more efficient information system with fewer systems that you have within that system. What happened with that? I know you hate folks with history and with memory.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I don't remember that. I'm sorry. We promised to reduce the number of systems we've had.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to go back and look. I don't know.
I won't burden you with that, but this will be my last time in state government, so I have three more years after this, okay? So you won't have me on your back, but I want all you guys to remember. No. Bobby, as you're spending money, as you're overhauling the system, why not become more efficient and have fewer systems within a system? It seems to me to make sense for that happens.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, it makes perfect sense to be able to do that if you can do it within the budget. You know, like with the Y2K budget, we spent, I think, about $44 million solving Y2K for this department only. But we're busily rewriting code in the 12.7 million lines of code we have in this department. And that's what we worked on. We did not work on trying to combine systems.
Combine systems.
So if... The information systems and what we can do several things that we don't do now. We can, in an integrated work site, give people in an integrated work site access to more systems than they have access to now. But it's cumbersome to go sign off one system, sign on another system when you're looking for the same client. What we've discovered is a product called MetaFrame, which we're using in Jackson County, which allows you to call up more than one system at the same time on the same computer screen. So you can call up the computer screen on your computer screen using MetaFrame They have little icons for every one of our systems, and you can open a window in every one of our systems on a client, and you can get the information that way. But it's not combined. It's not integrated system. So we're trying to look at obstacle. We're trying to remove some of the obstacles. But to rewrite our systems into one integrated system, there's not enough money for us to do that. And it would. By the way, we'd all be retired before it got done. These systems are so big.
Well, in all due respect, there's a company in the state of Washington that specializes in this stuff, and I think it would be worth talking to them about this very issue. But that's a side issue. And how much time did you need for these folks back here, or are you going to do all of this?
Well, actually, I was going to tell you just one other thing, and then I'm done.
Okay.
In the back of this book, the last portion is Lenny, it's more than Lenny.
No.
But Lenny was kind of the overseer of this. This is the plan that describes everything I talked about today. That's the good news. The bad news is that it doesn't have enough detail in it. And Lenny has developed, along with a lot of other people, a process that we're going to start the next week.
Thereabouts. Next week.
Thanks. Next week, we're going to start a process of filling in the details. And so... if you all have people from your areas of the state who very much want to get involved in the details of this reorganization, give us our names. We're going to involve as many people as we can in this because we need to look at it from every angle to make sure we get it right. And so we're going to, well, Lenny will have a plan. I'd be happy to come back in a next week. Will you be done with that plan next week?
Next week we should have the map of how all those parts are laid out.
To talk to you about the implementation plan so you can see how what the different areas are. And you can give us your ideas about the plan. You can give us names of people you'd like to get involved. But with that, Mr. Chair, I am finished, and we stand ready to answer any questions, all this group.
Okay, I just wondered if any of you folks want to rebut.
Free. Okay.
Probably not. Representative Girard.
That goes right along with their resignation.
Yeah, it does.
Bob, none of us have had a chance to read through all of this yet, but one of the things that I hear you touching on and I see is missing is a timeline. And I would think that you'd really want to say, okay, you know, in 60 days, we're going to have this done. That's our goal, to have this done. But I don't see that anywhere in here. There is no timeline, and that bothers me.
Yeah. Ms. Chair, Representative Girard, I guess so. It's just so complicated. I understand why it bothers you. It bothers me, too. Our goal is by sometime in May or June is to have as much detail on this as we possibly can. The thing I got to tell you though is we want to do this right. We want to involve as many people as possible. But before you all leave town, we've got to have the devil in the details so that you can examine it and hear testimony on it. And so we hope to have that done by the end of May. But, Lenny's process is going to be a very detailed one. This is a huge organization, 150 programs, interacting with all kinds of folks that we need to involve in this, and I just think it's going to take some time. That's my best guess on it right now.
Okay. It was a guess.
It's a guess. Okay. It's a goal.
Representative Girard, Chair Cruz, and Chair Fisher, if we were to talk next week or soon thereafter, we could show you how, almost like a construction schedule, we will be mapping out task by task, linking them together on the implementation planning, and you would see how over the next 6 months we're going to accomplish these things, and the next 6 months we're going to accomplish those things. And so all the different parts begin to come together as if you were developing a major housing
follow-up. Yeah. And I don't mean to speak for the two chairs of these two committees, but I can speak as myself. I certainly would like to see that timeline and see how far you're progressing on whatever basis that you would feel comfortable with in keeping us informed.
We'll do that.
Thank you.
Have you got a sample?
We will have more meetings.
Oh, we're going to have.
As joint or separate.
Yeah, we're going to have tons more meetings on this thing.
Having them back for reporting.
I guess one of my concerns as you go into this, I mean, number one, you've already lost some key people. You're going to be reshuffling folks, obviously, as you go into this new structure, filling holes and different things like that. What is the sense, not only within the building here, but out in the field? I mean, what's the level of apprehension, uncertainty? What's the spirit of the troops? Or do you really have a sense of that at this point?
Well, Mr. Chair, just let me say that when I was doing the day-to-day development of this plan, I sent out a weekly email. I probably got 100 responses back every week I sent one out. I sent out 12, and you've sent out several since then. And the emails were overwhelmingly positive. Now, I got to tell you that probably the people who disliked this the most didn't email me back.
Mm-hmm.
But they were overwhelmingly positive. But some of the remarks were cautious. I mean, they're optimistic. They think we're going the right direction, but cautious about the details of this. How's it really going to look? I've heard some concern from our staff through those emails and some conversations. How do you expect us to know the whole system? My response about that is a couple of responses. One, we're not going to expect you to know the whole system. You need to keep your specialty. You just need to work in a team. And the second response to that is, we are expecting our clients to know this whole system, and who has a better chance of understanding it, us or our clients? So the burden about understanding it better should be on us. The feedback I've been getting from legislators, from the union, I just had a meeting last week with Al Stale from OPEU, from the counties, is that people are positive about what we're trying to do, but they're cautious about what the details are going to look like. And I think, I don't want to speak for the executive team, but that's pretty much the feedback I've been getting from them when I speak with them individually. Good idea, but, you know, there's a lot of work to be done here. Can we get it done so that it works the way we want it to work? The devil's in the details. We've got to get to the details to see exactly how it's going to work and where the we know there's obstacles out there that we haven't thought of yet. So we got to get deeper into this. I've been here in this department for 12 years now. In my heart, I know this is the right thing to do. It's just getting it done. And that's going to take effort from everybody that works in our department and all the help we can get from you, advice and direction, and also from our partners in the counties. I've been working with in our local government advisory committee with a group of county folks, and they're optimistic, but they're cautious, as I say. So maybe you just ought to ask a few folks what they think. I don't know how else to get at it.
And, Bob, you know, from 30,000 feet, I like what I'm seeing at this point. And I don't want to give you the impression that I don't. But along the lines of Representative Girard's timeline questions, your budget was built on an old system.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have an opportunity in the budget committees during the session to be able to look at packages like your training package and things like that? I mean, how are we in development on those things?
That's a very good point. And one of the things that I've asked Doug Wilson to make sure that we do is that one of the things that has to happen in Ways and Means is because we're presenting you a budget under current law, which is the current organization, is planning on how we transition a budget under the old organization to a budget in a new organization without knowing what exactly it looks like yet, what are the steps we have to go through. I think it's fair for you to ask me to bring in the training design. I don't have that yet, but
okay.
We need to make that part of it. And also information systems.
Yeah. I assume we have just tons of budget notes on this thing, but that may be an assumption. Representative Morissette and Senator Fisher.
Bobby, I will have some questions to submit to you in writing concerning the senior disabled services of AAA, the projected increase in numbers of seniors in the future, the organizational structure that will meet their needs.
Okay.
And I know, you know, I want to be fairly precise in the questions so you can formulate an answer either the next time we meet or maybe just getting together and talking about that. Thank you.
Great.
Senator Fisher.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to put on the record, and you and I have discussed this before, concerning my desire to make sure that the people out in the end of the chain are constantly being talked with to see where they can bring in things, and just a reorganization of doing the same thing. If there's ways that paperwork can be reduced, red tape can be cut and eliminated, those are the things that are really going to help also, because those are not only frustrating to those that have to do things that aren't particularly necessary, they're also frustrating the people that have to go through it. So I just wanted that on the record, and you've indicated that you were looking for those things to me, and I appreciate that. I might just note that Doug Wilson knew exactly the right time to be absent. When you turned around and pointed, he'd just take him off. So.
Doug said a doctor. He didn't help. Been sick.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that I'm going to be interested in hearing more about, too, is the a little bit more in the details about how you plan to make the system permeable vis-a-vis your partners on handling any given case. I can imagine having difficulties around confidentiality rules and a variety of other issues that are related with that. And I also can imagine in a system that works well that on any given case, it may very well be one of the partners who supplies your lead services manager or somebody equivalent to that.
That's right.
On any given case. And so working through the legal morass and the organizational morass in how you go about actually setting up these circles that we are describing here, I think it's another area that I'll be interested in hearing more about.
Okay. We'll be ready to do that.
Senator Shields.
Bobby, you touched on this a minute ago, but I think it bears a little more analysis. There's 12 of us around this table, senators and representatives. None of us sit on the Ways and Means Committee. I sit in on the Human Services sub because of my commitment in that area. But like this past week and a half, we wrestled with a nice, big, thick adult and family services budget.
Mm-hmm.
How can we really intelligently move forward with those complicated budgets when no sooner than we get through with AFS, SCF, VRD, FDSD budgets that come independently or separately, and we turn around and we have this this new system where some of those don't exactly exist as they did before? I think you need to try to define that a little more for us.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Shields, you're right. We need more definition. But here's one of the things. And Doug in Legislative Fiscal Office and Department of Administrative Services have to figure out exactly how that's going to happen. As soon as I've given them that charge, as soon as they figure it out, you and I could be the first to know how that's going to work. But one of the things I need to tell you is, remember, when you're doing the AFS budget and the SCF budget and the like, you're passing budgets and programs, and we're not getting rid of any programs. What we're doing is realigning the programs. We're making the programs, trying to reduce the fragmentation. But what we are going to do is change the management structure within those, and so there will have to be some revision done around that. So we will get back to you with the process as soon as I know. That's got to be an agreed-upon thing with LFO and DAS.
Okay, well, we do fund programs, but mostly we fund personnel. So,
actually, Mr. Chair, over about 80% of our budget is direct payout on programs.
Well, I understand, yeah, that stuff. But as far as service delivery, it's people.
Absolutely right.
And there is going to be some adjusting there. So, that's going to be a key piece of this also.
That's right, Mr. Chairman, it's going to be some adjustment. But I'm glad Bob said he didn't have to spend 12 years on Ways and Means. But I can assure you that realignment hasn't anything to do with the budget in the sense that they're going to have to live within the framework of their budget, but we're going to be getting money back from this budget. And I think that's what you said. That was cost savings of $10 million.
You get four of it.
Okay, I was just wondering if you were asleep.
Unless, of course, you take more.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you were asleep or not. But you own overall 10, but the governor will let you keep 6, right. Is what you said.
Right.
So now you know I listen well.
Yeah.
So I think that it is important for us, you know, I'll come back on you. You know, it's important for us to remember that as a committee, one thing that Bobby said is so important, we're on 1 year's budget going into a new year's budget, but regardless to what it is, the future budget is that you have to live within the framework of that. So the money we won't have as much trouble about, it is redesign and implementation, and that's what my concern is in terms of implementation, that no one is left behind, and that if they are, that, well, and if you do have some overage, that when you're looking at realignment, that you would use those skills well. And that if people are going to be left behind, because that's when we as legislators are going to feel it, depending on how many people you're going to lay off.
Yep.
I won't even ask you that today for the record. I won't even ask you that because I know it could create problems for you. But
we're not going to do that.
Okay.
Bob, what sort of external evaluation assessment program have you put together?
We have, Mr. Chair, we have an oversight contractor looking at our processes and giving us advice, and I'd be happy to bring him to a meeting and have him talk to you about what he's found.
Who is it?
His name is Ken Dispro. He does this kind of work throughout Oregon and other states, oversight contracting.
Okay. And from my House colleagues, three of Senator Fisher's committee I served in the House with, and the Senators Messerly, Shields, and Carter, and you guys missed some fun. Anyway.
I had mine 2 sessions before you did.
That's right, you did. That's right.
Well, we'll generate some fun here, yes.
Oh, we will. We will. Any other questions?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just very minor compared to the overall broad picture that you presented to us, but I was noticing, I did not read the word by word, but there was a number of bold areas that you put new statute wording in that really wasn't just changing department and director. And let's just choose a page, for example, on page, let's choose one that's a little bit more. I want to get a good one. Page 79. In the middle of the page, 4A. You had actually made some bold changes, and I wasn't quite sure. Will there be someone who'll be able to explain that?
I'll explain it to you. I don't have that in front of me right
now,
but I will explain that to the committee. I'll make a visit to you and explain it, and I can explain it to the committee next time.
Yeah, I don't think we necessarily need to cover it here, but I would like to have it.
Sure. I'm happy to do that.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. The issue of the integration of the physical and mental aspects rather than keeping them separate, could you maybe give us just a bit of your thoughts on the integration of that and how that's going to come together rather than having people go to two different places and that kind of thing?
Well, Mr. Chair, the health cluster would include both physical and mental health and the behavioral health pieces, the chemical dependency pieces, and public health. And for a long time, I thought it's been needed that we have an integrated policy around health. As a matter of fact, one of the things you remember when the legislature enacted the Oregon Health Plan, there was a goal to put physical and mental and behavioral health together, and what we're trying to do is locate those in one spot now so that we can have an integrated policy. I think that there's interplay in between those, and we certainly know about that for people with dual diagnosis in other areas, and I think it's important for us to consider all of that and when we develop our policy. So that's kind of the thinking behind the unit in health.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, I just want to make sure none of your department heads really wanted to get up here, and I seriously doubt that they did. I think they also know that they will be up here at some point in time.
Yep.
So,
keeping the powder dry.
We'll keep the powder dry. We thank you all for coming. We look forward to working through these issues and developing a decent product here. And we will try to coordinate this as much as possible so that we have both houses involved in the discussion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. And if anybody came in late and didn't hear the announcement about the sign-up sheet for testimony at further meetings on this subject, it's over in the corner. And with that, we are adjourned.